Hello, this is Karen Fresco with the News Gazette dated Wednesday, August 12, 2020. We begin on the front page with the article headlined, Coronavirus Response, Park Districts to Crowds, Break It Up, by Deborah Pressey Champagne. If you plan to bring a larger-than-allowed group to a Champagne park, be warned. The Park District has begun sending out newly hired park ambassadors to Hessel and Westside parks and some others as needed to disperse crowds exceeding public health guidelines. What we are aware of out there are groups that are getting together without our knowledge, and sometimes those are exceeding public health recommendations, said Dan Olson, the Park District's Director of Operations. Since the state moved to Phase 4 of Governor J.B. Pritzker's Restore Illinois plan, the Park District has again been allowing rentals of larger picnic shelters for up to 50 people, with limits on smaller shelters allowing up to 20 people, he said. Permits were being issued for up to 10 people during Phase 3, though there were few takers for gatherings that small, Olson said. Gathering plans for more than 50 people could potentially be permitted, but that would require prior review and approval by the Champaign-Urbana Public Health District to make sure safety guidelines will be met, he said. Earlier in the pandemic, the Park District was assisted by police in dispersing crowds in parks. Now the new park ambassadors are being sent out to high-use parks to remind people of crowd size limits, Olson said. For even these outdoor group get-togethers, Olson said the district is encouraging the use of face masks and social distancing, though he also said there's no way for park officials to know if groups gathering are family members who are already together anyway. There's a trust factor we put on people using the parks, he said. While the Champaign Park District is only renting outdoor facilities such as picnic shelters for now, the Urbana Park District is renting picnic shelters and its lake house at Crystal Lake Park. The Urbana Park District is permitting rentals for up to 50 people, or half the capacity of a facility, whichever is less, according to Janet Sosby, its community programs manager. The Lake House currently has a capacity limit of 25 people and has a couple of baby showers scheduled, she said. Sosby said the Urbana Park District plans to add some signs reminding the public about capacity limits at picnic shelters, but the district doesn't have resources to police crowd gathering sizes. What looks like a large gathering at times may just be more people using the parks, Olson said. What we've seen more of is a lot of people out in the parks, he said. A hard fall. Colleen, we will manage through the financial impact. By Ben Sichterman, Champaign. During a normal Illini football game day, Papa Dell's would be packed from the time of the final whistle until the end of supper. Especially for staff who live for those busy weekends, General Manager Andrea Seaton said. Now, everything is going to be up in the air for a while, she said. Citing health and safety concerns related to COVID-19, the Big Ten announced Tuesday that all fall sports, including football, volleyball, soccer, and cross country at Illinois, would be postponed and possibly rescheduled for the spring. U of I Chancellor Robert Jones, a member of the conference's Council of Presidents and Chancellors that made the decision, acknowledged the disappointment of athletes, coaches, and fans. However, the health and safety of our students, staff, faculty, and campus community must be our priority, Jones said. There are just too many unknowns with COVID-19 today, and the future continues to be just as unclear as it was months ago. He noted that the discussions among Big Ten administrators were as frank and honest as they were difficult. President Tim Killeen told the News Gazette that he has been interacting regularly with Jones about the decision. I do appreciate that this has been a collective decision that's involved a lot of medical expertise and discussion, he said. He said the decision was disappointing to sports fans like me and obviously to the athletes themselves and the coaches. But he added, I think it was done in the proper way, with a lot of input from medical experts and good collective decision making. While Killeen said he's concerned about the financial impact of the virus on many fronts, we will manage through the financial impact, including in athletics. Local businesses are also working through those financial effects. It's really hard on the restaurants and bars in this town, but I guess it's understandable, Seaton said. We all want to come out and be back to normal sometime. The prospect of a spring season may help, but it could also line up with other sports, IHSA tournaments, and the Christie Clinic Illinois Marathon. We'll take Illini football anytime, but then it competes with other events, Visit Champaign County CEO Jane DeLuce said. It will be an interesting logistical challenge. She said football game days bring in millions of dollars and benefits not just bars and restaurants, but hotels, caterers, florists, and dry cleaners. And for some local businesses, she said, spring may be too far away. The need is now, DeLuce said. Some businesses will not make it, not only because of Illinois football, but also because they were already at an end or close to an end. Continuing a conversation we're privileged to host, the News Gazette asked African American community members to share their stories and solutions in the wake of George Floyd's killing. Featured today, Gladys D. Hunt, the longtime retired coordinator of community outreach and new program development in the U of I's Community Psychology Department. Now is the time to really listen to Black voices and stop trying to invalidate our stories. You can legislate laws, but not their hearts. During the 60s, I was just like the nonviolent protesters today, marching with my signs, my chants in the fight against racism, prejudice, and discrimination in business, housing, education, employment, the criminal justice system, and police brutality. We had such high hopes that things would seriously change for the better. So now to see my children and grandchildren today marching, holding signs, and chanting for the same issues is very disheartening, to say the least. I was born in a little town called The Hill in southern Illinois, where we were a small, self-contained Black community built up around the stockyards. We had our own school system, first until eighth grade. The teachers and administrators were all Black and did a great job of encouraging us as students to be the best that we could be by doing our best. We were nurtured in this great atmosphere and were very excited by education. When any one of us made the honor roll, we cheered and celebrated. After eighth grade, we were bused to the larger East St. Louis school district, where all of a sudden we were in the minority and were treated differently. At this time in the 50s, East St. Louis was predominantly white. It was very hard for us children who came from an encouraging and positive school for 8 years to now be treated negatively. We didn't have a word for the treatment. We did not know the word racism, but we surely felt the impact of it. Luckily for us, though, our educational self-esteem was set those first 8 years, and we did not believe the negativity, saying we were less than and not as smart as our white counterparts. What I learned later is that our parents had to do the same thing that Black parents did here in Champaign-Urbana a number of years ago, sue the school district. The high school I attended had been recently constructed and had been built in a white suburban neighborhood so far out that it was hoped that Black children could not get to it. So the Black families sued the district and won the legal battle to have the Black children go to the new high school as well. So we were bussed even back then. The Supreme Court struck down separate but equal, but inside of the schools, Black children were tracked into classrooms where we were still segregated. That's the nature of racism. It has, over the years, become more insidious and gone underground, especially in the institution of education, but it's still there, rearing its ugly head and trying to destroy the lives of Black children. The public schools are sometimes referred to as the pipeline to prison for Black children, especially boys. By the way, due to white flight from the city of East St. Louis, this high school is now all Black. In addition, white flight contributed to the downfall of the city. How? By stripping its tax base, by taking away the majority of businesses and jobs that these businesses provided for many Blacks when they left to form white sundown towns all around the city. What most white people don't know is that racism is multifaceted and multi-leveled. Much, if not most of it, is hidden underground and insidious. It happens individually, institutionally, and systematically. Of course, you probably won't see most of it in action because it's not happening to you. So now is the time to really listen to Black voices and stop trying to invalidate our stories. You can legislate laws, but not the hearts. People will find a way to get around laws. For example, I mentioned the majority white high school I attended. Well, although I scored highly on all the standardized tests, was always on the honor roll, and had a 3.8 GPA on a 4 scale, I was intentionally kept out of college prep classes at my majority white high school. I was tracked for office work, typing in shorthand. I knew nothing of Illinois State scholarship money, which was there to help pay for college education for Illinois students who qualified, which I did. But the white counselors told neither me nor any of the other Black students about it. It was a source of college funding that was for whites only. A little while after I graduated from my high school in the top 10% of my class, the community college movement started. When it opened in my community, I ran and was probably one of the first ones in line to enroll. That's when I found out about Illinois State scholarship money and that I could have gone straight from high school to college had the counselors informed me. Bottom line, I had the grades, I had the test scores, and I had the GPA, but I was Black, and the powers that be thought I might make a good secretary, but certainly not college, right? And I bet if I could go back and talk to these school staff about this, they would swear on a stack of Bibles that they were not at all racist or prejudiced. But the system they were upholding and adhering to was racist. What if I had not followed up with the community college movement? What if they had told me about the scholarship program and I had gone straight to college after high school? There are so many what-ifs. And surprisingly, after the 60s, after the protesting, after all we went through to change institutional racism in our school systems, it did not stop there. I came to the University of Illinois after finishing my associate degree at the community college in 1973 and completed my bachelor's degree, 1975, and later my master's degree, 1989. But my oldest son ran into the very same problem I had in my schooling, in his schooling right here in Champaign-Urbana. One day, he saw white students looking at and talking with each other about paperwork they had gotten from the office. Curious, he went into the office to ask what was going on, and was told by a black counselor that this process was not for him. He found that the white students were looking at their ACT-SAT scores. This is another particular part of racism called internalized racism, and it means that sometimes black people tend to believe and go along with the racist practices of white society, actually believing that black people are undeserving of certain opportunities, and they perpetuate the same racist practices of the dominant society. It reminds me of the black slave who was the one using the whip on the other slaves at the master's command. It's like saying, "Stay in your place." Well, my son finished both his bachelor's and master's degree at the U of I and is now working in corporate America. He went back to his old local high school and confronted his black counselor. How many other black children actually believed her or other white counselors down through the years when they told them it was not for you and did not pursue their dreams? Think of the hundreds of thousands and more of schools where this happened on a regular basis and is still happening today. You see, there are causalities to this kind of systemic racism. What do you imagine the lives of those casualties might look like today? Think about it. What do you think it might mean in terms of poverty, under and unemployment, broken families, parenting, crime, prisons? While working in the community psychology department at the U of I, I helped local black parents who were part of the suit filed against the Champaign School District for racial discrimination. I'll never forget the final report from the suit. It stated that two school districts existed simultaneously, one for white students, encouraging, loving, and supportive, and another, more negative, degrading, and prejudiced, one for black students. The Twilight Zone, right? Well, during this time of unrest and protesting in the aftermath of the murder of George Floyd, some school districts are beginning to take the opportunity to move in a new, more equitable, and anti-racist direction. I pray that this is more than just one more talk and will lead to a more just school system where black children have the same opportunities as others. Then, hopefully, my grandchildren's grandchildren won't have to march another generation or two for the same reasons that I marched. After serving as the first Black Assistant Executive Director of the Housing Authority of Champaign County, Gladys D. Hunt worked in the U of I's Community Psychology Department until retiring in 2010. She is now the head case manager, a minister, and teacher at Restoration Urban Ministries. Champaign parking lot curfew extended. Champaign. In the wake of gunfire Saturday at a downtown parking lot, the city announced that it will close the lots at Neal and Washington Streets and Walnut and Washington Streets at 9 p.m. on weekends through Labor Day. More than two dozen rounds from different guns were fired into a crowd of about 100 about 12:30 a.m. Saturday in the city-owned lot at Neal and Washington. One man was shot in the foot. Two others were arrested and charged with weapons offenses. The closings are being done to discourage crowds from gathering in the parking lots to socialize, an ongoing problem in the warm summer months. Drinking and gambling are prohibited in city lots. The lots will be chained at 9 p.m. on Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays and will not reopen until 7 a.m. Visitors may park in those lots before 9 p.m. Those needing to park past midnight can use the Hill Street parking deck at 123 West Hill Street, Champaign. That article by Mary Schenck. From the Our County section of the paper, Coronavirus Response, Urbana District to Go Remote for First Quarter, by Anthony Zillis, Urbana. The Urbana School District will move to fully remote learning for at least the entire first quarter, instead of just the first 2 weeks of school, which was the plan the district announced last week. In the midst of a sustained spike in COVID-19 cases in Champaign County, Superintendent Jennifer Ivory Tatum announced the new plan at Tuesday's board meeting, and the board passed the resolution. "Our community did so well for so long in containing the virus," Ivory Tatum said, "which is one of the reasons we were planning all summer that we would have some in-person time with students, even if it was just a small amount, to get them acclimated to remote learning environment at the beginning of the year. Those numbers have changed, and our situation in Champaign County has changed very quickly." Before the meeting, Urbana Education Association President Alicia Trezise said she hoped the remote learning plan would be extended to provide teachers time to plan along with peace of mind. "I think our plan is an excellent plan," Trezise said. "The Labor Day date, a lot of my union membership and a lot of parents are stressing that they would like to see it extended and get that consistent message. It relieves the anxiety of rushing into, I've got to be really on the point of remote, and then I've got to be ready for hybrid. It gives them the chance to be really prepared for quality remote learning." Ivory Tatum said the district is working to provide Chromebooks for all students and to help families sign up for free or low-cost internet. It will also use 8 buses as hotspots. She also said that the middle and high school will open some large common spaces. Substitute teachers and others will likely staff those spaces, though Ivory Tatum said their number will be limited to allow the maximum amount of space for students. "If we can't have our regular school environment because of the risk, we can have 30 or 40 students spread out in a huge space like this," Ivory Tatum said. "I think we can do this safely." Ivory Tatum said last week that while teachers would work their butts off, remote learning would be hard. Board member John Dimmitt echoed her concerns Tuesday. "My biggest fear is that what little progress we made toward closing the achievement gap is going to evaporate very rapidly without support to the students that need it. So I appreciate this opportunity that we're providing to at least catch some of the needs," he said. Champaign City Council: Language Updates to City Code Move Forward, by Ben Zichterman, Champaign. At its meeting Tuesday, the Champaign City Council moved forward in updating the city code to reflect changing language around gender and sexual orientation. If it formally approves the changes at a later meeting, sexual preference would be replaced with sexual orientation. The term transsexual would be removed, and gender identity and gender expression would be added to the city's ordinances on human rights and equal opportunity in purchasing. Council member Matthew Gladney said he supports the changes, but wished they weren't necessary. "It's kind of a shame that this is something that has to be there, because that means that there's no reason for it to be there, that people haven't been treated fairly and so need a protected class," he said. The changes would bring the city code in line with the Supreme Court decision this spring that said employees can't be discriminated against based on their sexual orientation or gender identity. Because of that decision, Assistant City Attorney Jennifer Bannon said, even if we did not touch our human rights ordinance, we would still prosecute cases where there was an allegation that someone was discriminated against based on gender identity or gender expression. She said sexual preference should be removed because it is an older term and tends to imply more that sexual orientation is a choice or a lifestyle. We wanted to update that to include something that makes clear that sexual orientation is an inherent identity that deserves protection. Under the proposed revisions, transsexual would be removed from the city's definition of sex, intersex would be added, and a definition would be added for transgender. The new language would also be updated to align with Illinois law and require all single-user restrooms to be open to all users. It would also make clear that anyone is allowed to use the bathroom that most closely aligns with their gender identity. Weather. In Storm's Wake, Power Outages, Down Trees. By Ben Zichterman, Mahomet. The tornado siren in Mahomet sounded during Monday's storm, even though there was no tornado. The Mahomet Emergency Services and Disaster Agency sounded the alarm shortly after 4 p.m. when it said wind gusts of more than 85 miles per hour were recorded at County Line Road and Interstate 74. We stand by ESDA's decision to sound the siren this afternoon, the village wrote on Twitter. Police Chief Mike Metzler said the village did not receive any significant damage. Elsewhere, the National Weather Service received reports of wind gusts of 60 miles per hour at Willard Airport and 62 miles per hour in Urbana, along with reports of trees down in Champaign and Urbana. During the peak at 5:20 p.m. Monday, around 60,000 Ameren, Illinois customers lost power across its service area. As of 6 p.m. Tuesday, 290 customers in Champaign-Urbana were still without power. Although the entire service area experienced outages, LaSalle County was hit the hardest. Champaign and Vermilion counties were also among the areas with numerous outages being reported, spokeswoman Marceline Love said. Although the entire service area experienced outages, LaSalle County was hit the hardest. Champaign and Vermilion counties were also among the areas with numerous outages being reported, spokeswoman Marceline Love said. She said more than 1,200 people are working on repairs statewide, but due to the fact that the entire Midwest was hit hard by this storm, there are a limited number of qualified personnel. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the News Gazette dated Wednesday, August 12, 2020. Please stay tuned.